This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Pretty normal Tuesday over here at VPR. How about for you? JK, I don't even need to say it, but it's Election Day, the day many Americans have been waiting for 18 months to be over. Early estimates suggest that around a third of all voters made their choices before Election Day. But that still means millions of people are headed to the polls today, and thousands upon thousands of Vermonters. The state police even sent out a note this morning observing that polling places were already very busy, meaning lots of stop-and-go traffic, and they were entreating drivers and pedestrians to pay attention. Today on the show, we are throwing open the phones. We want to know what you're doing today to mark the occasion, how you're celebrating the end of campaign 2016, and who you voted for. We'd love to know what went into your thoughts on who you want to see as the next president, the next Vermont governor, and what the issues on your local ballot are. If you've had a tough time making up your mind about some of the votes, join the club. Here are the three gubernatorial candidates in VPR's debate last Thursday night. On Tuesday, on Election Day, Suminter, will you be voting for yourself?
Yes, I will.
Phil Scott,
yes,
will you be voting for yourself?
Yes.
Bill Lee, will you be voting for yourself?
Still up in the air.
Who do you think you'll vote for? If not yourself, who will you be voting for?
I always vote for myself. Every time I look in the mirror, I see a hero.
All right, be a hero and call us with your thoughts. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm joined in the studio this hour by political scientist Eric Davis for some last-minute expert analysis. Eric, great to see you here.
Good afternoon, Jane.
All right, so what are we seeing up to today? Let's just go right to the national race first in terms of early voting, because people are voting today, but as many as a third of all Americans will have already voted. So what do you know, or what do we think we know?
The early voting laws vary a lot by state. Some states don't even allow it at all. New York and Pennsylvania are good examples. In other states like California, sometimes close to half of the vote in some counties in the Bay Area, for example, is cast early. On the average nationwide, about a third of the vote has been cast before Election Day. What I find particularly interesting is that in states that have well-organized early voting programs, like Florida and North Carolina, the turnout for the early vote this year is much higher than it was in the previous election. Indeed, more people have already voted in Florida this year in 2016 early than the total turnout in that state in 2000. Now, granted, Florida's population has grown a lot during the past 16 years, but people are taking this election very seriously, and if they have the opportunity to vote early, they're doing so. What that also indicates to me is that I know journalists and pollsters talk about undecided voters, but there really aren't that many. I mean, if you're voting early, you know who you're voting for. So I think we will see high turnout nationwide here in Vermont. Secretary of State reported that close to 100,000 early ballots have been requested. They should all be back in by the end of the day today, 7 o'clock, with an estimated total turnout of about 325,000. It looks like we're looking at somewhere between 25 and 30% of the Vermont vote will be cast early.
Eric, did you vote early this year?
Yes, I voted early. The reason I did was in part a practical reason. The town where I live, the town of Cornwall, had property taxes due on November 1st. So when I brought my tax payment into the town clerk's office, I voted at the same time.
Well, you and I have something in common. I brought my town taxes in and voted in the Moncton Town Hall a couple weeks ago myself. I wonder if more people are doing that. Maybe town taxes are a way to get people to the polls after all. Listeners, have you voted early? Does that make a difference to you to be able to vote early? Is it something that maybe you appreciate because today is a busy day for you? Or have any of you voted early and then thought, uh-oh, maybe I made a mistake? I mean, that is the danger of early voting, is that something changes in the last few days and you change your mind and you made a vote that you really wish you hadn't. I wonder if that applies to anybody here, or if you've been set for a long time and early voting was just a convenient way to do it. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or cast your vote on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. John is calling in from Chester. Hi, John. Go right ahead. What are you thinking?
Hey, morning. Basically, I am thinking that I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson this year. I just can't put my faith and trust in either of our candidates. It's just with all the negative press and everything that's going on with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, forget about it. She's just untrustworthy. I just don't trust the Clinton administration.
Oh, John, it sounds like we lost you, but we got your point there. You're not writing in. You're voting for Gary Johnson today. You can't stomach either of the two candidates who are probably going to garner the most votes. You're not the only one. Christina in Underhill says, I will be taking my kids along this afternoon when I cast my vote. I haven't yet decided whom I will write in as a presidential vote, as I cannot bring myself to vote for either of the major party candidates. I cannot vote for Hillary simply to be part of electing the first woman president. I'd be more proud to live in a country where people are valued not for their gender or race foremost, but for their character and intellect. Of course, I will be proud when I get to vote for the right woman candidate, but she will need to fulfill all of the requirements of what I look for in a president. Eric Davis, a couple people here not very satisfied with the two-party system here and not very satisfied with Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. You think that's a sentiment widely shared in Vermont?
I think we'll see more of that in Vermont than in some of the states that are close. Indeed, one of the big questions for me about the presidential race in Vermont is how much of the vote will be cast for the two third-party candidates who are on the ballot, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, plus write-ins for an assortment of people. I think Bernie Sanders will get a fair number of write-ins, plus an assorted group of Republicans. Every poll that we've seen in Vermont, and the sense of every expert, is that Hillary Clinton is going to win Vermont by a substantial margin. So in a sense, Vermont voters can cast a ballot for a third-party candidate or write-in, knowing it's not really going to affect the outcome in the state. But in a close state like New Hampshire, that's not the case. And indeed, I find it interesting that Bernie Sanders, who spent a lot of time campaigning in Vermont on behalf of Hillary Clinton, is emphasizing to voters, don't waste your vote on Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, or a write-in. Vote for Hillary Clinton. And he reminds New Hampshire voters that in 2000, Ralph Nader received more votes in New Hampshire than the margin by which George W. Bush beat Al Gore in that state. He says, we don't want that to happen again. We don't want Donald Trump winning New Hampshire because people vote for the best as opposed to the good, so to speak. So I think we could see as much as 10% of the Vermont vote for one of the third-party candidates or for write-ins.
What do you think the percentage could be for people writing in Bernie Sanders, either in Vermont or nationally? I mean, do you think that that's something that we're going to see at least, you know, a couple of percentage points?
Yeah,
for?
I think he'll receive several thousand write-in votes in Vermont. The poll that VPR did about a month ago, 5% of the people volunteered they were going to write in his name. Whether it's quite that high tonight, we'll find out. But a lot of people are dissatisfied, as the caller indicated, with both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and writing in Bernie is an alternative. He'll probably get some write-in votes in other states, perhaps not as many. And then there's on the Republican side, there'll be some write-ins too. Phil Scott announced this morning that he wrote in John Kasich's name, and there are some Republicans who are in the anti-Trump camp, the never-Trump camp, so to speak, who might write in Kasich or Mitt Romney or an assortment of other Republican names.
We got a listener, PRH, writing in to tell us, I will be voting for none of the above to show my frustration and contempt. How did we ever get to the point where we have to cope with elections? That certainly is a common sentiment, this idea of coping with election anxiety. We did a whole show about it yesterday. But this idea that people are dissatisfied. Let's go to Sherry calling in from Brandon. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that I voted for Hillary, and I did so early. I work on boats, and I'm away often, and I didn't know where I'd be today, so I wanted to get that in. But I was a Bernie supporter, and honestly, I voted, you know, I'm almost 60 years old and voted most of my life, but I wonder whether we really do vote. I mean, I'm a pragmatic, intelligent woman, and yet there's a part of me that really questions whether what we say makes any difference whatsoever. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, Sherry, thanks for your comment. We actually got an opposing idea from Dale, who says, I get irked every time I hear the promo for today's show that says, maybe you've thrown up your hands in despair and decided not to vote at all. Dale writes, I know it's been ugly, but I don't think you should be presenting not voting at all as a viable option. Thank you. I love everything else. Eric Davis, I'm curious what you think about the voter apathy or voter despair leading to a suppressed turnout. By all accounts, it seems like we may have a higher turnout than normal.
Yeah, I think we're going to see high turnout. But whoever wins the election is going to win with a majority of the electorate dissatisfied with the choice, disapproving of the person, not liking the choices they offered. And I think the country and the political class, so to speak, has to have a serious conversation after this election about why we ended up with two candidates, both of whom are seen unfavorably by rather substantial numbers of the American public. And it has something to do with the nominating process in my mind. It has something to do with the way the media has covered the election. It has something to do with the length of the campaign and the amount of money that is spent on it. And I think we need to have, as a society, very serious conversation about all of those topics so that this sort of outcome is not repeated again.
Do you think we need to have a serious conversation about the media's role in politics as well?
Yes, we do. I think the coverage in the last 6 weeks has become more critical. I don't think Trump has been able to get away with as much as he was earlier in the campaign. But I think, you know, he complains a lot about the media today. But I think back in the primaries, he was receiving very favorable coverage and, in the view of many, a disproportionate amount of coverage. I think an unfortunate statement about the nature of media coverage today was a statement attributed to Les Moonves, the president of CBS, back in the spring during the primaries, who said, "I disagree with nearly everything Donald Trump stands for, but he's been great for the ratings at CBS." And one step that could perhaps be taken to deal with that would be to have the Commission on Presidential Debates, rather than the TV networks and the national party committees, organize the primary debates. Some of the primary debates ended up being presented almost as entertainment shows or sort of gotcha shows rather than as serious debates on the issues. And I think we saw from the WikiLeaks that the DNC did have a thumb on the scale when it came to the number of debates, the scheduling of debates, and so forth on the Democratic side.
And who would be favored.
And who would be. So I think that if the Commission on Presidential Debates would take over the responsibility of doing primary debates, that means determining who the moderators are, how many debates there'll be, when they'll be held, all those sorts of things, I think it would be an improvement.
Did you see the tweet that Kurt Schilling, former Red Sox pitcher, retweeted last night of a man in a T-shirt purportedly at a Donald Trump rally wearing a T-shirt that said something like, "Journalists, rope, tree, some assembly required." I mean, there is some real animosity.
Right. And reporters who cover the campaign, particularly the Trump campaign, have noted that. At the Trump rallies and at the Clinton rallies, too, the media is kept in a section sort of off to the side. And that section has been the subject of a lot of abuse from the crowds at Trump rallies. And it's violent chants. And the other thing is, you know, a number of these reporters are African-American or Asian-American or female, racist and misogynistic chants, as well as some anti-Semitic chants directed toward the press section. And I think one of the very disturbing aspects of this election for me has been how that sort of rhetoric in some ways has been legitimized by the Trump campaign's failure to say, "Stop, no, this is unacceptable."
We're talking with political scientist Eric Davis, and with many of you, we'd love to know whatever your thoughts are today. It's sort of open phone lines this hour. We want to hear what you've been observing in your polling place or in your social and professional circles. What's the mood like? And who are you voting for? Who have you voted for? Why? What are you expecting from tonight? And what are you hoping moving forward for this country to find some unity and for our state perhaps to find some unity as well? Certainly not as full of vitriol in our state debates and races, but not without some controversy and some hard feelings. We're getting a lot of comments from listeners. Dan said, "I voted early by absentee ballot in Burlington. The easiest vote was for president, as I was alarmed by the divisive rhetoric from Mr. Trump's campaign against immigrants and people of color. The statewide races weren't all that gripping for me. I mostly voted Democratic, and I chose Minter over Scott." Scott reminds me a bit of Douglas, Dan says, "someone who gets along with everyone and offends almost no one. But that's not enough to cast a vote for a Republican. If he's elected governor, I wouldn't mind that much, to be honest, although I think issues like marijuana legalization would remain off the table." And Dan continues, the most difficult votes were for ballot items 3 and 4 on the Burlington City ballot dealing with TIF in downtown Burlington and Burlington Mall redevelopment. I voted for them, but I expect them to be voted down by Burlington voters, at least from the active and energetic opposition that I've seen and read about in local media. Jeff in Hinesburg says, I don't like Hillary or Trump. I voted Jill Stein to get her 5% of the popular vote for federal campaign funding and ensure a spot on the ballot in 2020. We need to break up the establishment two-party system. One listener, Dia, says, I'm a Democrat, but I'm hearing more sincerity from Phil Scott. I liked that he disavowed the negative campaigning against Ms. Minter and that he is completely clear about his stances. So we're tackling all kinds of races today. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Rob in South Burlington. Hi, Rob. Go right ahead.
Hi. I am not going to vote for Hillary Clinton because of the VESTA emails, which outline, you can read them on WikiLeaks, which outline really high crimes and misdemeanors that Mrs. Clinton and Podesta have committed. And y'all ought to Google spirit cooking because the stuff on her involvement in certain practices involving the occult needs to be looked at because it also involves children. But this is something that is getting no play by the press and certainly no play by NPR or VPR. And that's a shame because you guys need to do your job rather than propping up the establishment. So we're not going to vote. Lots of people are sick and tired of the establishment, and we're sick and tired of mainstream media lying and not covering things to protect Hillary Clinton. So,
Rob, I hear you, and I hear you saying you're not going to vote. You know, I don't know the story about the occult. I have not seen it verified anywhere, and maybe that's what you're saying, but that's not a story that I've seen. But I appreciate your perspective. You join many in saying you are dissatisfied with the media and you are dissatisfied with the candidates. Eric Davis, any thoughts on what Rob was talking about?
Well, I mean, obviously there are people who are dissatisfied with the media. I mean, one of the things that we've seen this year is an increasing polarization of media, and people choose increasingly to listen or view media that presents a slant that is in accordance with their own views. So people on the liberal and progressive side are more likely to watch MSNBC. People on the conservative side more likely to watch Fox News. The other thing, though, is the increasing spread of information on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and other things, much of which is inaccurate. And surveys done by the Pew Research Center, for example, indicate that among younger people in particular, sometimes social media or websites that aren't run by professional journalists are the principal sources of information about political news.
And that goes for both sides.
It goes for both sides.
Conservative and liberal are seeing misinformation on both sides and sort of drumming up excitement that is not necessarily fact-based.
Right. And this is one of the biggest changes in American politics over the last, I would say, 10 to 20 years. Last Friday, if you happened to be on Google, you might have noticed there was a little graphic with Walter Cronkite on it. And the reason was last Friday would have been the 100th anniversary of Walter Cronkite's birth. And in the days of Cronkite's heyday, say the 60s, 70s, 80s, there were three large network news organizations, all three of which tried as hard as they can to be impartial and to present as comprehensive a summary of national and international news as they could in 30 minutes every night. We don't see that anymore. I mean, the networks still have their news shows, but less of the minutes are devoted to quote-unquote news and more to quote-unquote features. And there's this proliferation of sources. Yes, that's a consequence of the technological revolution. But I think we do need to think about from what sources Americans find out about news, politics, and public affairs, and what is the quality of those sources.
Today we are talking with Middlebury College Professor Emeritus Eric Davis. We are wrapping up campaign 2016 and looking ahead to tonight, and we're asking for your insight as well. Tell us what you've observed at your polling place. Who did you vote for president, for governor, or in down ballot races? What are the issues that are most important to you, and what are you hoping for tonight? Call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Dan says Trump's campaign has set us back some years, but now we are more aware of our divide than ever. Hillary was not my first choice, but I think she'll do quite well, and I believe wholeheartedly she would be winning by a landslide if she was indeed a he. Madison from Burlington was torn between Sue Minter and Phil Scott in the governor's race up until this morning. Madison writes, I am normally a Democrat, but after listening to her debate on VPR using Hillary slogans and her ads from Obama, Sue Minter seems too establishment and not for Vermont, but for party. I switched parties and voted for Phil Scott. Lori says, this national election has been more stressful for me than any other one in my voting history. One of the things that scares me the most is that there are already several other leaders in the world, in Russia, North Korea, and the Philippines, that seem angry, arrogant, and ready for a world war. We do not need another such leader here in the United States. You can share your thoughts with us. Tyler says, vote Trump. We need change, not another 4 years of treading water. We need to move forward. Hillary has had 30 years to make changes and has not done so. Now, if you are thinking about the governor's race today as you go to the polls, there are three candidates, and you've heard from all of them on VPR over the last many weeks. Liberty Union candidates Bill Lee, Republican Phil Scott, and Democrat Sue Minter. Here are excerpts from interviews they did on VPR's Meet the Candidates series.
I'm the alternative candidate. I'm both left and right. I am a true Vermonter. My great-great-great uncle was the first lieutenant governor of the state of Vermont. I came here because Vermont picked me, and I love it. It's an ideal. I believe we're the Second Republic. I believe we should do everything ourselves and separate our ties eventually with the United States, not take any federal money.
Well, I am the candidate that has been able to bring people together. I've made my whole political life on consensus building, facilitating, reaching across the aisle, and I'll continue to do so. And I think that's part of the answer. Reinstilling the faith and trust has been lost in state government and nationally as well. And you do that by acting appropriately.
I want to be the next governor because I love this state. I love bringing people together and getting things done. I want to create more livable wage jobs, more vibrant communities to support our young families and entrepreneurs. I want Vermont to be a strong place for economic opportunity and to make sure we are committed to an environmental stewardship and sustainable future.
That was Bill Lee, Phil Scott, and Sue Minter, the three candidates for governor of Vermont. Eric Davis, they're all claiming, well, at least Phil Scott and Sue Minter, that this race is too close to call, so they're getting their voters out today. What about you? Are you ready to call it?
Nope. I agree with them both. I mean, yesterday, they both spent a lot of time on get-out-the-vote activities. Phil Scott, starting at 4:30 in the morning and ending after dark, visited all 14 counties, and Sue Minter spent most of her time in Montpelier and in Chittenden County after having spent most of the weekend in southern Vermont. So they're both of them are looking for support all over the state. I think the question will come down to how many voters follow the path of one of the people who got in touch with the show and said they voted for Hillary Clinton for president, but Phil Scott for governor. And my guess is that if Phil Scott can get about a quarter of the people who vote for someone other than Donald Trump for president, whether it's Hillary Clinton or a third-party candidate or a write-in, to vote for him for governor, he'll win a narrow victory. If Sue Minter holds on to a larger percentage of the non-Trump voters, she'll win a narrow victory.
Which is certainly not unprecedented. Vermonters are ticket splitters.
Are ticket splitters. I mean, Jim Douglas got about 40% of the people who voted for John Kerry and Barack Obama in 2004 and 2008. The difference was, in those 2 years, Jim Douglas was the incumbent, and he was facing Democratic candidates that were not as well organized and well supported as Sue Minter is. So I see this as the most competitive gubernatorial race we've seen in some time. If Sue Minter manages to win a narrow victory, she will do something which has not been seen in Vermont in over 50 years, which is that a departing governor who chooses not to run for re-election will be succeeded by another governor of the same party. The last time that happened was in 1960, when Bob Stafford did not run for re-election for governor but was instead elected to the U.S. House, and he was succeeded by another Republican, Ray Keeser. Since then, every time the governorship has been open, it switched parties. So we'll see whether that history continues to play itself out or whether Sue Minter, in a way, makes history.
We got a note from George who says, I'm proud to support Sue Minter for governor. She's the only candidate with a plan to combat climate change and get Vermont off dirty fossil fuels. With 1 in 17 Vermonters now employed in the clean energy sector, Sue's the only one who will continue to grow this sector and allow Vermont to continue to be an example for the rest of the world in the fight against climate change. Chris in South Burlington says, I am 100% pro-choice and voting Phil Scott. Let's get real. There will still be a Democratic majority in the Vermont State House and State Senate, so the restrictions being discussed are not being proposed, and if they were, they will not pass in the legislature. And Lori says, I'm normally more aligned with the Democrats, but I like both Phil Scott and Sue Minter. They are both decent people with integrity. Vermont's elections this year are a breath of fresh air for me, as the stress of the national elections has been so terribly upsetting and frightening. Let's go to Lucy, calling in from Burlington. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead.
Hi. I am just finished voting this morning. I'm in Burlington and really excited about Sue Minter. I'm proud to have such a strong woman running, and it's a little, like, hard to see that it's such a close race because I know we've got all kinds of great candidates, but I think she would be an incredible governor. And I've been talking to some people as a volunteer for the Democratic Party, going out and knocking on doors, and people in Burlington are so confused by lots of issues on there around development. They're like, I don't know what to do, and I'm saying, if you just want to go and vote for Sue and skip the rest of it, do that, because it has been confusing. Unfortunately, the language on the ballot that explains those ballot items having to do with the 14-story development are not clear to people, and they're having a hard time figuring out what to do. So that's unfortunate. And other people saying they just don't want to vote because it's been so frustrating. But I'm excited about Hillary. I'm behind her 100%. And I really hope she wins and that she'll be our next president. And I'm happy and excited and looking forward to hearing results.
Lucy, thanks for your thoughts and for letting us know what you're thinking and who you've been voting for. Let's go to Sue in Essex, New York. Hi, Sue.
Yes, hi. I just had a comment about the election. I feel that it's really been treated like a reality show by some of the media, and that's the main reason that Trump became the Republican candidate. And I also feel that a lot of people are experiencing election fatigue, and there should be a time limit for the electoral process. If Canada can elect a prime minister in 6 weeks, we should be able to do it within a 6-month time period to elect a president.
Sue, thanks for your thoughts. I appreciate that. And I hear the exhaustion that you share with many voters. Jeff is on the line with us from Montpelier. Jeff, what are you thinking?
Hi. I just wanted to mention, the previous caller alluded to this, where does the line get drawn where the media is being played out as a scapegoat and the personal responsibility of it's the citizens to process the news and distinguish between reality TV? There seems to be a lot of that blending going on. Thank you.
Yeah, Jeff, I hear you. Eric Davis, what are you thinking?
Well, several comments. First of all, there was one of the listeners expressed strong support for Sue Minter on environmental issues. And one of the things I found interesting in the VPR poll that was done a month or so ago was the most important issue that was mentioned more than any else was jobs and the economy. But then there was a cluster of other issues, health care, the education, and environment. And what the poll results seem to show is that people who think jobs is the most important issue tend to be in Phil Scott's camp, and people who think the environment, education, or healthcare are the most important issue tend to be in Sue Minter's camp. So one of the things that we'll find out from the results tonight is which one of those clusters of issues ends up affecting more voters' choices. There's been a lot of attention in the campaign to other issues like abortion and choice, guns, and so forth, but the poll indicated that there aren't too many voters for whom those are the most important. It's either jobs and the economy or education, the environment, healthcare.
Going back briefly to these questions about the media and the media's role, Amir in Brattleboro is reacting to a previous caller who called in and wants us to call out insanity, in his words. Amir writes, I feel that you are far too diplomatic to the caller who raged about Hillary Clinton being involved in occult activities. It is the role of an impartial media to call out hate-fueled conspiracy theories for what they are. And Lori says that spirit cooking Hillary occult thing appears to be internet scam promoted by fake news sites. Haven't had time to research in depth, but there is tons of this stuff out there. Consider the source. And yeah, Amir, let me respond to you and just say I agree that the media should call out hate-fueled conspiracy theories. And in this case, it just wasn't something I have ever heard about. So before I say that's totally ludicrous, I just wanted to say, you know, that is not something I'm aware of. And there are certainly hate-fueled conspiracy theories out there. That's not one that I'm aware of. Can't quite call it out as fake, but yeah, absolutely, certainly sounds it. And Lori shares a little bit of insight with us. Eric Davis, do you see the role of the media, the media playing that role in calling things out?
Well, I think one of the things, and the media has done more of it in the last 6 weeks, is fact checking. When Trump continues to repeat assertions such as the murder rate is the highest in 45 years, or Americans are the highest taxed country in the world. There are a lot of reporters who keep repeating those claims are simply untrue. Now, it may be that a strong Trump supporter, when a reporter from the Washington Post or NBC News says these claims are just not grounded in facts, that doesn't matter because they think that the Washington Post and NBC News are part of some larger institutional conspiracy that's not looking out for their interest. But that is a big problem. And I think one of the things that we have to have a conversation about as a country going forward is if Hillary Clinton does end up winning, Trump may go away, but Trumpism may not go away. This sense of resentment and making conspiracies of things that really aren't. And I mean, David Brooks in the New York Times had what I thought was a very good analysis this morning. He said there have been people who've been sort of adversely affected by a lot of the revolutions of the last 20, 30 years, whether it's the feminist revolution, the technological revolution, globalization, the sexual revolution, whatever. But there is a way of responding to those concerns in a serious and thoughtful manner that doesn't involve name-calling and repeating false claims over and over again and concocting it all into some internationalist, globalist conspiracy. And, you know, Brooks went as far today in his column as to say the Republican Party may not be able to do this and it may be time for a new center-right political party. And that's farther than he's gone in the past. And I'm interested to see, if Hillary Clinton does win, where the sort of conservative intellectual and policy leaders end up going over the next cycle. Will they stay in the Republican Party or try and come up with some other alternative?
We're talking today with political scientist Eric Davis. And Eric, let me read you a few notes we got from listeners who have been following the U.S. Senate race. Alpha 16 says, it's a shame that we've created a political aristocracy in this country where individuals actually become career politicians and die in their seat. Loose Lips Leahy has been around about 20 years too long. Brotley says, poor Scott Milne just doesn't understand Vermont's political context. Milne based his deeply underdog campaign on aggressively and negatively attacking Leahy. Even if Milne's points are valid, his tone and manner toward Leahy are so off-putting that he damages himself and the Vermont GOP more than if they had let Leahy run unopposed. And Devin left us a comment saying, I voted for Trudell instead of Leahy. I think Leahy has held the office for far too long. Trudell is against Wall Street gutting the middle class and supports progressive ideas, but remains independent, much like Sanders. Eric Davis, from what we can see from polls, it would suggest that Senator Leahy will be winning tonight.
Yes. And since popular election of U.S. senators began in 1914, no incumbent U.S. Senator from Vermont seeking re-election has ever been defeated. What I am interested in is to see what Leahy's numbers look like. The last time he was up for election, which was 2010 in an off year, he got 64% of the vote. If Scott Milne can get over 35% of the vote into the high 30s with a few percentage points for Trudell, Leahy may actually be a little bit below 64%. So I'm interested to see whether he'll get in a presidential year more or less than he did the last time he was on the ballot in an off year.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, John. Go right ahead. Hey, John, you there? Yeah, go ahead. We can hear you now. Perfect.
Great, great. I was wondering what Professor Davis thought of this idea, the frustration with the whole process, generally frustration with the whole process based on the lack of familiarity with the system, with the intricacies and actual purpose of the Electoral College, and also with the lack or perhaps the lack of engagement with the political process. Are the people going to select board meetings? Are they running for this? If you're not participating, it's really hard to understand. And then every 4 years or every 2 years, you know, expect to get up to speed. I just wonder what he thought.
Eric?
That's an excellent question. I would say here in Vermont, we have higher levels of political participation than in many other parts of the country because our communities tend to be small. Yes, there are a few legislative seats that end up going unopposed because one party can't recruit a candidate to run in a district that he or she would almost certainly lose. But I think levels of participation in Vermont are generally high. We'll likely have one of the highest rates of turnout of any state, around 70%. And also it looks like over 90% of the age-eligible population is now registered to vote. So we have high turnout levels there. And I think local democracy through town meeting and local governing boards and so forth is strong in Vermont. I think in some parts of the country, and luckily we don't have this, but in some parts of the country, sometimes there have been rather deliberate attempts to suppress the vote this year. Through things like closing polling places, making it difficult to vote early, imposing photo ID requirements and things like that. The courts have struck down some, but not all of them. And I think that's something you need to watch out for, that does not become a trend. Every serious study of alleged election fraud indicates we're talking about a small fraction of 1% in previous election cycles. So I think there's been some overreaction there. But the general point about the complexity of the political system is certainly true. One of the reasons there's such a large turnout, a large early voting in California this year is because some of the jurisdictions there have huge ballots because of the number of propositions on the ballot. In San Francisco, there are 17 statewide propositions and about 25 city propositions. And the pamphlets that explain these, which have the full legal text of the propositions, argument for and against, run to over 500 pages. And very, very few voters are going to go through it all. And the authorities want people to vote early because they don't want long lines in the polling places as people try and figure out what all these propositions are about. I think in some ways, direct democracy in California has gone a bit too far, and there needs to be more representative democracy and somewhat less direct democracy. Vermont, I think because of the small town nature of many of our communities, still preserves more direct democracy in an environment, in a town of 1,000, 2,000 people. It works very well as opposed to a state of 30 to 40 million like California.
You mentioned election fraud. We're getting a few reports of voting irregularities in Vermont today. Jerry in South Burlington says, I just wanted to let you know that someone tried to vote twice while I was voting in South Burlington. Plus, both my sons are still listed on the rolls here. One is in Boston and voted down there, and the other at Champlain College and registered in Burlington and voted there already. Jerry, again, in South Burlington. And Jerry says, I told the desk at South Burlington, and they said it was up to me to get them off the rolls, that they couldn't do anything about it. And let's go to Kenny, who's calling in from Hyde Park. Hi, Kenny, your experience?
Hi, Jane. I came in and they challenged my address in High Park. And the thing is, my dad's still on there. We still live in the same place. And I don't know why they challenged my address.
So did you get to vote today, Kenny, or not?
I did not. They won't let me vote.
Huh. And anything that they said you can do about that? Or are you just out of luck for this year?
Out of luck. They told me I could challenge in 2 weeks.
Wow.
But 2 weeks is not now. And the thing is, I brought a homeless person in, and they just voted. My dad's 92, and he's still on the roll to vote. And we live together, and yet they challenged my address. I don't understand that.
Hmm. Kenny, how are you feeling about it? I mean, you're disenfranchised, it sounds like. How do you feel?
I feel very angry. I feel disappointed, and I think maybe there's kind of a rigged system going on here.
Hmm. Kenny, thank you for sharing your experience with us, and we've got that down. So we'll see if we can look into that, and you know, see if we hear anything about it, or can get to the bottom of that, and we'll keep everybody posted if we do figure anything out about that. Kit is 14. She's listening in class as a homeschooled freshman, and she writes, "If I was old enough to vote, I would not vote for Hillary Clinton. I despise the way the media completely favors Clinton, and I also cannot stand the way people believe she should be elected because of her gender. It does not matter that Hillary Clinton has a uterus. It is her morals, her values, and the way she can lead a country that matters. I would vote for Donald Trump, although I do dislike the idea that he does not believe in global warming." In the time we have left, Eric, let's just briefly touch on the lieutenant governor's race. VPR interviewed all the candidates in statewide races leading up to the election in our Meet the Candidates series. And listeners, you can go back and listen to all of those interviews if you'd like. We have them up at vpr.net, and we have a whole voter guide that you can listen to. The candidates are Republican Randy Brock, Progressive David Zuckerman, and Liberty Union candidate Boots Wardinsky. Eric Davis, are you willing to make a call on that race?
Yes, I believe David Zuckerman will win, perhaps not by as big a margin as some of the polls indicated. The polls had him up by somewhere between 10 and 15%. I think it may be more like 5 or 10%. The reason I would explain that result is that there's been huge amounts of attention to the presidential race and the gubernatorial race, but not as much the lieutenant governor's race. And we have relatively less information. Partisanship becomes more important. There are more people in Vermont who think of themselves as Democrats. That will help David Zuckerman. I think his endorsement by Bernie Sanders, who's clearly the most popular politician in Vermont right now, is going to help him. Also, I think the fact that he won that close primary campaign back in August gave him some momentum in terms of organization and campaigning skills that he's been able to continue with in the fall. So I'd expect a narrow victory for David Zuckerman. Now, if Phil Scott wins the governorship, this would by no means be the first time that we've had a Republican governor and a Democratic lieutenant governor, and we've had the opposite combination many times as well, as we have had in the last 6 years. So Vermonters don't think of those two offices as in any sense being a ticket that should be paired.
Yeah, it will be really interesting to see what happens tonight. Eric, I know you will be watching. It's going to be a late night for everybody. I appreciate you being here in the noon hour. Eric Davis is Professor Emeritus at Middlebury College. Thanks.
My pleasure, Jane.
All right, so that does it for this hour. Now, tomorrow, at least some of this will be over, and our panel of bleary-eyed Vermont political reporters will unpack all the election results and talk about what happens next. So send your questions and observations to vermontedition@vpr.net, and then listen live tomorrow at noon. But first, be sure to stay up with us tonight. VPR will have special coverage all night long from local reporters and from NPR. We'll keep you up to date on the national races and on the big races in Vermont. We start at 7 p.m., and we will go as long as we need to. So listen on air or follow online at vpr.net. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the program. Special thank you to Emily Alfin Johnson. And our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.